Welcome to the John Maxwell Executive Leadership Podcast, where our goal is to help you increase your reputation as a leader, increase your ability to influence others, and increase your ability to fully engage your team to drive remarkable results. Hi, I'm Perry Holly, a John Maxwell facilitator and coach.
And I'm Chris Cody, Vice President of the John Maxwell Company. Welcome, and thank you for joining. As a reminder, if you'd like to learn more about the five levels of leadership, or perhaps even bring a workshop to your organization around this content and this model, please visit johnmaxwellcompany.com/podcast. As well, if you have a comment or a question for Perry, we'd love to hear it at that point. Well, today's topic is really part two, and I hope you've listened to part one of this series. If you haven't, listen to this one, and then make sure you go back and listen to part one of Are You an Inspiring Leader? With our friend Chris Fuller. Just as a reminder, Chris is the principal and leader of Right Path Resources, a great partner of ours around behavioral profiling and leadership training, professional development. He's also a longtime facilitator and coach for us and content developer. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Perry and I weren't sure you were coming back after that first session with us. That's what happens to us sometimes is that people will do one lesson with us and then we never see them again. But we are excited to have you back. Also, as we kind of get started, just to kind of give you a baseline of what we are talking about today, Chris has a book, Inspired Leadership, Your Proven Path to Remarkable Results. And we're really just kind of digging into Chris's thought and his mind, the way he leads, what he's learned, and kind of the principles behind the book. And the first session of this, the last time our podcast was recording, we talked about the first two.
Sure.
In this kind of across that you developed. Give the listeners just a quick recap of the first two that we covered, and then we'll dive into the remaining five.
So the acrostic is the IN of inspired. That's is good, to yeah. be intentional, right? If we're not intentional, then we're accidental. And how many of us, even if you succeed on accident, how do you replicate that?
Yeah.
And so you have to be intentional to succeed on purpose around those things. And you've got to be intentional about people and process, and you've got methodology, and you've got all these things to be intentional about. Well, then the S, so the IN is intentional, the S of inspired is, are you service-centric? How do others experience you? You know, Perry, you talk about this often, but nobody wakes up in the morning and says, oh, I hope my boss manages me today, you know? If I could just get managed more, my life would be complete. And so how are we experienced? How does that service come across? And we need to be, it's not weakness, it's a matter of equipping and empowering this amazing workforce that will unlock their discretionary effort. So those were the first two that we covered last time.
And what I want to jump in here real quick, and Perry's going to jump in and we'll start the rest of the acrostic. But one of the things you were showing us that I thought was just fascinating as we talk about some of the content that you deliver around Inspired was, all right, well, here's a list of 15 to 20 things that we would determine as you serving your team well. And we were going through and we're like, oh, yeah, that's it, that's
it.
Good.
That's a good one.
And none of it made me feel like it was weak or, you know, as some people sometimes misinterpret the servant leadership. And so, yeah, he just pulled them out. And I love the three columns there that are talking about that. And so I think that's so key for us to understand. Don't be afraid to serve your people well. That is not a weak leadership trait or attribute.
Right.
And you kind of break that down. And there's more of that that you can learn from the book or from Chris.
Well, that whole mindset, though, I think early in the book you talk about are you designing a culture or defaulting to one? And that's all of these 7 points, and especially that about the servant leader and the servant orientation leads to a culture that I think most people want. How do you see that about design default?
Well, culture happens with or without you.
That's right. And you have one.
Yeah, you have one, whether you want it or
not.
That's
right.
So the struggle is we're either gonna build it on purpose, or it's gonna be built by the strongest personalities on our team. Right.
That's good.
So if the leader doesn't, you can't abdicate. Right. There's no void that's going to occur in your culture. If you don't step in and lead and be that person that designs it and you're intentional about your interactions on a daily basis, how people experience you, how people experience the workplace, that becomes the culture. Why? Because that's what's accepted. What's permitted is promoted. What's allowed is endorsed. culture is not the poster on your walls, it's the chatter in the halls, right? And so as you start to think about
that, if you want.
Yes, right there.
If you start to think about all the, it's a thousand little things. It's the interactions that occur. And if we're not intentional about that culture to say, no, wait, nope. You know, yes, we'll attack the process, but not each other. Yes, we will deliver results and we'll be relational. All of the design around that culture and the interactions and the expectations, that's really what we're talking about owning. And you're either going to be an organizational owner, you're either going to be a cultural owner, or you're going to be a cultural victim.
Right. Fantastic. Well, let's move. We got a lot to cover. I want to, the IN was intentional. The S was service. We're up to P. The P stands for passion. Walk us through that.
So I'm a guy that trades on energy. You probably can't tell.
No,
that.
Really?
Really? No.
We're wanting to know if you'll come back for episodes 3, 4, 5. Matter of fact, I'm going to step out of the room right now.
Replace one of us.
Yeah.
That passion, that enthusiasm, right? If you're not bringing that energy, the law of the lid, when we talk about John's law of the lid, right? The leader is the lid on the organizational's energy capacity. And so as we start to look at that and we start to focus on, leader, are you fired up? Do you come to work on purpose, with purpose on a daily basis? And marrying purpose and passion, that's where we start to unlock that discretionary effort. And are you still lit up? And leader, if you have lost your fire, I'm asking you, please either regain that fire, regain that passion and energy, or find something else that will light you up. Because at the end of the day, the team can never rise above your enthusiasm. And one of the things I know about teams is teams are either going to be mission-minded or they're going to be messy-minded. And sometimes we need that passion. We've got to rally the troops, and you got to have it before you can give it to others.
Fantastic.
So I'm going to encourage you, if you're driving, I don't know, maybe you're on a treadmill right now somewhere else, at some point in time, get somewhere with a pen and a piece of paper and just listen to the last 3 to 5 minutes, because there is a lot of gold right in there, some one-line statements that Chris, you know, shares with you. And what I love about it is, leaders, we're contagious. You're contagious, to your point. It's going to happen with or without you.
Yeah.
And so you're going to set that bar around passion. And so you're either going to have a team that's like, wah, or like Chris, where you're bouncing off the walls when you walk in here and extremely passionate.
Well, you guys are into sports, right? What are they talking
love
about
it.
All the sports?
Yeah.
You're talking about the momentum has shifted, right?
Yes.
So as a leader, do you even have a barometer on the momentum, the energy, the inertia within your organization?
Yeah, and momentum, as John says, and we've learned, solves 80% plus of your problems.
Great exaggerator.
The great exaggerator,
gives you the
right?
Horsepower.
It gives you the horsepower behind it. Okay, so in your book, also kind of referring back to it, I love this because I think this is a huge conversation about challenges that we have inside the organizations around culture. You say there can be a disconnect between personal passion and the organization's purpose. So we talked about you got to have the passion, right? But if there is if it's not in alignment with the organizational purpose, we're going to have a problem.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that and just your thoughts behind that.
You got to bring the fire to work every day. So here's the deal. What you do for a living is either your fire or it writes the check to allow you to do your fire when you clock out at night, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, what are you lit up about? What lights you up? Now, for me, I want to light it up with people that light me up in an impactful way, right? And so that passion and that fuel, I happen to have aligned my passion with my employment. And so what I do for a living is my energy. It fills me, fuels my tank on a daily basis. But I don't want you to think that just because your work is not your passion, that you don't need to bring that fire to work every day, because we need to see our work as our resource for us to be able to do that passion nights and weekends and be able to do that particular thing. Either way, your work is your fire, or your work pays for your fire. Either way, bring that fire.
That's good.
Fantastic.
That's good.
So the I in the Inspired framework is for integrated. I think this was not more obvious to me, so to explain integrated, because I like it.
Well, you know, even when you're inspiring, how many of us have ever worked in an uninspiring process?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How many of you ever have thought, when you're trying to serve your company, it really shouldn't be this difficult? I'm having to fight my company to serve my company, right? That is called bureaucracy. And anytime systems are meant to support, processes are meant to add value. And so if we're not integrated in process, if we're not integrated, how many times do we silo up and it's sales versus accounting or sales versus credit or you know, quality versus production? And so we need to integrate instead of isolate. And so that integration of understanding people and relationships and departments and internal and external, if you want inspiration, sometimes we need to leave the theoretical. We've got to be intentional, and we've got to get into the grittiness of who does what by when and how we're going to hand off this baton, because the outflow of that becomes uninspiring or exasperating.
Yeah, and you got to have that abundance mindset around what you're doing in order to integrate, to understand the bigger picture of that. All right, so the R, right? I love this. And it everything that you're talking about is, I think, the foundation for what we call level two, connecting with your people so that they want to follow you, right? Like, just even in recording this episode and your passion, right? Like, I want to learn more about that, like, whatever it is, like, right? And so I'm at that point where that level two influence is just naturally going to happen if you become an inspired leader. All of that doesn't happen without this next letter.
Right.
And you talk about being real, R-E-A-L, right? John, you've heard John say R-E-A-L for how many
years?
He's
got a few books on that.
A few books and a few lessons on that. But man, this is so true. It goes back to that authenticity piece that we've talked about, because how many of us have followed a non-authentic leader,
right?
And we're like, oh, talk about real from your lens and why it's so important in this concept.
This is one of the reasons I made the significant investment into Right Path is you've got to know your wiring in order to be authentic. You've got to know your core. You've got to know where you're coming from. And so anytime I print out somebody's behavioral styles, their personality, and we do this assessment, I make sure that everybody is crystal clear that there's no weakness on that
That's
page.
Right.
There's no weakness in your personality.
That's
the
right.
question is not, is it a strength or a weakness? The question is, how does it fit in light of your role? So we do a lot around making sure the right person gets in the right seat. We talk about the ability to match job, function, and behavioral style or personality. So in that alignment, that real, that reality, then I know, you know, you can be this heavy-handed, blunt, assertive, you know, independent person, and it in some areas, it is going to be a strength, not a weakness or not a struggle. So when we get real about our wiring and we can get real about each other's wiring, then we can look at how we can interface, integrate on those things. But the first piece is, can you be real? Can you be authentic? And can you even just be authentic enough to own it? I know I'm not always a detail person, so I need to lead where I'm strong, put a system where I'm weak. I need to lead where I'm strong. I need to partner where I'm weak. And it's not about insufficiency. It's about this amalgamated, inspiring, collective team that we get if we get real.
So here's what I want to go. I want to run down a little rabbit trail with you really quick.
Because
when you were just
got to do that too.
Yeah. So we'll go two. We'll go one out, one back. You got the one back. While you were just talking about that, a story you shared with me came to mind. You know, we hire and add to our team because of the skill set and what they're bringing to the table, and we want them to be real and we want them to be authentic. But then they get on our team, and as soon as something's not working right, or maybe we don't like the way they're doing something, we want to change them. And you shared a story with Mark Cole and I a couple weeks ago. We were out in Dallas for a large energy company, and you were doing some work with us. And so from a high level, share the story a little bit about the impact of being able to understand the assessment as a benchmark for a hiring tool in regards to – it was in regards to a call office. And what came to my mind was allowing those that are extroverted, because you think, oh, you know, call center, I got to have somebody that's extroverted.
Right.
But that's really not what we found out about what we need in those individuals. We need them to be real and authentic and aligned with who they are. And you couldn't do that until we did the assessment. Talk just from a high level and give our listeners a little glimpse about the power of the tool that you're now leading could be for the organization.
So we do a tool called benchmarking. And so for this particular call center, there were 300 people in the call center, and we profiled each of those for the behavioral profile through the Right Path Assessment, the Path 4 and Path 6. And then they forced rank the all 300 around the effectiveness that they were operating in that call center. So we had the top 10, 20%, bottom 10, 20%. And then we looked at their right path and we were able to benchmark. And those that were in a particular quartile, one of the things that we learned is for a call center that are talking to people on the phone all the time, wouldn't you want an extrovert?
Yeah.
You would want an extrovert,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the struggle was they were hiring people that were too extroverted. So the algorithm of the right path allows
so
me to understand whether you are an extrovert or whether you are a one sigma, two sigma extrovert, which means you're more extroverted than 90 to 98% of the population. So what happened is they were getting dissatisfied employees because they didn't necessarily want to be on the phone and then off the phone. They were extroverts. They wanted to talk more. So their call time went up. Their satisfaction with their job went down. They didn't want to stay at their desk. They wanted to interface more. And so one of the things that we found through this process was we were able to lower their turnover 10 points.
Wow.
10 points. Because we dialed back and said, if a person clips this particular one, you might want to talk to them about. So we didn't necessarily, it wasn't an exclusionary item on the hiring process, but it certainly was an interview tool to be aware that they may have a better role fit within your organization with a one sigma, two sigma, delta on their extroversion.
Love it.
Fantastic. I was interested in, always love hearing you talk about IQ versus EQ. That seems to fall under this being real. Piece of it for me, and just your thoughts about what's required for the job. Is it most people think IQ, you got to have that competency, but your take and most of the research says EQ has a stronger piece of that.
So I lean heavily on learning this from Daniel Goleman and a Harvard professor that really was the father of emotional intelligence sort of study and doing all of those things. And what I love about it is, you know, here's how I want to make sure. So the study came back and said, your success as a leader is 15% IQ, 85% EQ, okay? The piece that is important to me is it doesn't mean zero IQ,
right?
we say all the time, look, you know, if you meet the best people person in the world, but, you know, Southern vernacular, they're dumb as a post,
right.
Are you going to entrust your career track to that person? So what I believe is, the business acumen, the fundamentals, the excellence in your executive role, you need that. But what people remember more so than any of that is how you treated them, how you left them, how you interface with them. So the balance of IQ and EQ, IQ is table stakes to get you in the game. EQ is going to keep you in the game and engage your people and elevate their discretionary effort.
Fantastic. All right, moving on. The E, we're going to wrap this up. The E is for execution. Probably the most important thing as a leader you need to be doing.
Yeah.
Walk us through that one.
The reason we exist is to execute.
Yeah.
If you are not getting those level three results in the five levels,
that's right.
It doesn't matter how relational you are. You can kumbaya to the ends of the earth and you're going to be broke. Your organization is going to be mediocre. So we have to execute and we have to execute with excellence. So with the intentionality and the integration and all of those things, it culminates into this understanding, this deep understanding of the trip switches within your organization that makes execution a natural byproduct instead of this Herculean effort. Does your organization have systemic success, or is it through the Herculean effort that allows us to get there? So when you're talking about sales, hey, we want 365 new sales. Okay, well, my question is, how many leads are we getting? And if we're not doing marketing right, then we're not getting the right number of leads. So how can you ask me for 365 sales when if we backed up, we don't have the input to be able to deliver that output?
Mm-hmm.
So we look for the molecular. We look for the sort of those systemic breakdown pieces of the least common denominators, the predictive behaviors that are going to allow execution. And if we can help our team focus on the critical behaviors, the critical deliverables, then excellent execution will take care of itself.
Fantastic. That's great. All right, last one brings us to the letter D, right, which stands for develop. Tell us a little bit about this one.
Isn't that what you guys are all about?
I was going to say, and isn't it, yes, and isn't it, the three of us can sit here and share testimony after testimony that most organizations, most leaders don't go to that level of developing people, right? When we talked about the law of the lid on a previous lesson, and there's above that level two, that level three, right, the execution, there's just this lid
right.
on leaders and organizations around the world because they don't go to that next level of developing people. Talk to us a little bit about that from your lens.
You know, got a lot of Fullerisms, you know.
A lot of them.
And so my Fullerism on this one is you're either going to get better by the day or your team's going to get bitter by the day. And so this continuous improvement, Kaizenic type mindset where we're like, you know, if we're going to get there, it's going to be because leaders improve themselves and improve their people
That's
on
right.
a daily basis. And, you know, the old story that was in one of the Blanchard books was, you know, the pushback is, well, I don't want to invest in them. What if I invest in them and they leave? And the joke's kind of on them because it's like, what if you leave them insufficient and they stay, right? So the investment, the fear is the lack of investment. So as we look at this intentional leadership plan, these leadership plans that are going to grow the organization and grow the leaders, how many times have we promoted people prior to preparation? And so when you promote prior to preparation, you're setting them up for failure, not setting them up for success.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight. It's got to be developed. And in that preparation, champions aren't made in the ring. They're recognized in the ring. Champions are made in the preparation phase, in the dark of night, doing the minuscule things, doing the little things that are going to get us there. And leaders, it's because you have chosen to be the investing leader instead of the diminishing leader.
And I think one of the biggest compliments you could ever get as a leader is that you are a leader that developed leaders. It's not easy to do. And it goes back to
not at all.
It goes back to every single one of the acrostics that we talked about, right? We talk about starting off with being intentional. And all of those things would lead you to, if you do that right, man, just go ahead and put the icing on the cake with developing people. So as we wrap up, man, Chris, I love your passion. You know, longtime friends, appreciate everything that you do and what you stand for. And so I would encourage everyone to listen to this lesson and the first part of this lesson multiple times and get out your pen and pad of paper to take some notes. So let me just summarize as we close and kind of recap. IN, so what we're talking about is in the Inspired Leadership book, Your Proven Path to Remarkable Results that Chris has. The IN is for intentional. The S is for service. The P is for passion. The I is for integrated. The R is for real. The E is for execution, and the D is for developed. And I think when you are really thinking about driving results and increasing your engagement level inside your organization, that's what you need to keep in mind. And you can design your culture around that.
I love that. Well, my thanks as well. It's been very inspiring for me, and I've learned a lot. I really enjoyed the book. I think our listeners will too. You can get a learner guide for this episode and the previous one that kind of outlines all this for you. As Chris said, take some notes on that. And also, you can find all of that at thejohnmaxwellcompany.com/podcast. And you can leave a comment for us there or a question or learn more about the five levels of leadership. As always, we're grateful that you join us. This is the John Maxwell Executive Leadership Podcast.